Blog Talk Radio.
On November 22, 1963, John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, apparently shot while riding in a presidential motorcade from the nearby Texas School Board Depository. Let me try that again. November 22, 1963, John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, apparently shot while riding in a presidential motorcade from the nearby Texas School Book Depository by Lee Harvey Oswald, a former Marine. Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson then assumed the presidency upon Kennedy's death. On April 4, 1968, the American civil rights leader known as Martin Luther King Jr. was shot dead while standing on the balcony outside of his second floor room at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. News of King's assassination prompted major outbreaks of racial violence, resulting in more than 40 deaths nationwide and extensive property damage in over 100 cities in the United States of America. James Earl Ray, a 40-year-old escaped convict, fugitive from Missouri prison, later pled guilty to the crime and was sentenced to a 99-year sentence behind bars. Later, he retracted this plea, thus becoming the birth of the conspiracy theories involving the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. He has claimed his innocence and that he has been framed by a gun smuggler known by the name of Raul. Interesting. Both of these leaders assassinated by men who told the public that they were innocent. Lee Harvey Oswald, who supposedly shot John F. Kennedy, was forcefully silenced as he himself was shot and killed by Jack Ruby. Interestingly enough, both of these assassinations were done supposedly by lone gun guard. Try this again. Interestingly enough, both of these assassinations were done supposedly by lone gunmen. Tonight, we rehash the stories of both of these assassinations with fresh eyes and perhaps new information. Tonight, we have renowned researcher David Tony with us here on Flyerback Radio, and we'll be back. Now you know why I have to pre-record this. Hang on, I'm about to bring you in. And we're back on Fireback Radio, live with us tonight. We have researcher David Tony to talk with us here on Fireback Radio. Mr. Tony, can you hear me?
I can.
Very good, sir. Very good. Now, we introduced this in reference to MLK and JFK and the assassinations of both of these men. What, perhaps, can you add to this, or what can you tell us that we possibly missed in all of the researches that we've done over the years? I mean, everybody's done research into this. So what can you tell us that we don't already know?
Okay. So it's truly a deep dive once you start getting into probably one of the most mysterious assassinations of all time, which is still an open homicide in Dallas. Oddly enough, at the time in 1963, it was not a federal crime to assassinate a sitting president. Mm-hmm. So the jurisdiction remained the state in which the crime was committed, which would have been Texas. So to this day, that is still an open and unsolved homicide. And there's some speculation as to why Kennedy went down to Texas. We know he went down to he was actually not a very popular president at that time. And he was looking to run for office as a second term and was looking to garner support in Dallas or in Texas. And he was not actually going to go, LBJ at the time convinced him that he should go. So, the governor of Dallas was instrumental in them. Governor Connolly was instrumental in getting them down there. He took over the presidential motorcade route. It was put in the paper days before the exact route they were taking. And it's interesting that the term conspiracy theory wasn't really coined officially until the Kennedy assassination, because there is documentation that higher-ups in the CIA and elements of the FBI said, we have too many people kind of digging into this, all these people coming up with their own theory of what happened or what didn't happen. And so they started pushing this conspiracy theory term to get people to stop looking into this assassination. So that's when you start to see a spike in use of that term to get those that were digging into this, because there was, you can imagine at the time, there was every person that saw it had an idea on what really happened. So it was pretty rampant that everybody had a theory. So they had to shut that down pretty quick. LBJ had a theory, J. Edgar Hoover had a theory, and one thing they did not want there to be, the fear was if it got out that this was an assassination by the Russians, then you have a potential of a nuclear war, so they couldn't have it get out that it was the Russians. And then there was a theory that it was perhaps some Cuban immigrants who were upset about the Bay of Pigs invasion fiasco and wanted to exact revenge. And then you would have a second Cuban crisis, which we now, it's oddly enough, we're about to have a third Cuban Missile Crisis now, or a second, I guess. With China signing a weapons agreement with Cuba, that China is going to put a base in Cuba. That was just recently in the news. So now we have a new modern day Cuban Missile Crisis. So what I try to do when I'm doing my research is I try to do a deep dive and read books that are counter to each other's point. I read the books where the guys that believe that Oswald did it alone, and then the books that say he did not. And I try to see where those points where everybody agrees, when opposing arguments agree, those are the points that you lock down, and then you start to build upon that foundation. So when I was digging into this assassination, and it's very interesting that, you know, as a kid, I was born in 76, so this really wasn't that far off from 76. But for some reason, I had a fascination with the Kennedy assassination, far back as I can recall. So ever since I could find books on it, I was reading about this assassination. And you know, if you want to find out who killed Kennedy, you don't need to watch Kennedy. You know what happens to him. So it's everything else you need to pay attention to. I mean, there are things about him you need to look at, but they're really good at getting us to focus on the guy that got shot. We need to focus upon everything else. You know, it's like 9/11. You know, the laws of physics can't take a day off on 9/11, and there are things that could only happen with help. Oswald could not have changed the motorcade route. He couldn't have known in advance change of the motorcade route. And he couldn't have gotten the Secret Service to stand down. He couldn't have gotten the bulletproof canopy on the car top on the presidential limousine. He couldn't have gotten them to take that off.
That's something Kennedy wanted, as far as having a convertible. Is that what he wanted?
Well, the convertible was the presidential limousine anyway, presidential motor car. It was a convertible, but there were some subtle things that happened early on. One, they were given a weather report that said it was going to be cold and cloudy in Dallas. So Jackie put on the weather because he didn't want her to be cold. When they arrived in Dallas, it was hot. It was warm and sunny. And he was upset about that because Jackie's wearing clothes to deal with cold air, cold weather, and now they're going to be hot. So that was one of the reasons for the top coming off the vehicle.
Right.
So, I mean, that's circumstantial, but it's interesting that somebody knew what the weather was going to be. Surely somebody knew. But it was a precursor to potentially get that bulletproof top off the car. But there are standards protocols for a presidential motorcade that are non-negotiable. And just about every single one of them were either broken or completely abandoned that day. And so that's when standards and procedures and protocols are completely abandoned, that's when you start to lead to this was a planned event. And there are documents, official documents that have been declassified that lead one to believe case beyond circumstantial that this was a planned event. For example, there was at the time the United States was involved in Vietnam, but only had advisors, about 1,200 to 1,700 advisors in Vietnam at the time. And President Kennedy was getting us out. He had already signed papers to executive orders to begin phasing out American involvement in Vietnam. Yeah. And this document was recently found, and within recently, I'd say within the past 10, 15 years, but there was a document found in the LBJ archives, in the presidential archives, a document that it was a draft that was written November 21st. It was written the day before Kennedy was assassinated, that completely reversed his presidential orders. And this order was written to actually ramp up United States involvement, and was on LBJ's desk the day before Kennedy gets killed. They know Kennedy's getting us out of Vietnam, and this memo, which eventually became an executive order, 180-degree reverse the decision by JFK to get out of Vietnam, got us in it.
So, wow.
That's interesting that document was created the day before, 180 degrees against what Kennedy was doing. So there are some things that we missed. What did we miss? And the things that we missed that are very interesting is that there's a ton of evidence that supports Lee Harvey Oswald's innocence. It didn't make it into the Warren report. It was either brushed over, minimalized, or not even entered into the Warren report, or the witness is not even given a chance to witness.
Right.
One of the biggest points towards Lee Harvey Oswald's innocence is, one, there was a motorcycle cop right after Kennedy was assassinated. There's a motorcycle cop, I think it's Marion Baker. I think it's Marion Baker, and he was a motorcycle cop, ran into the school book depository, ran up the stairs, and threw his gun on Oswald as he was he was in the lunchroom having a Coke. Now, why that is significant is that the official story is that Oswald fired 3 shots, hit a rifle, ran down the stairs and down to the second floor. But here's the problem.
Right.
The official rifle, for 36 hours, for 3 to 6 hours, the official story was, all over the news, that Oswald had shot the president with a 7.65 German Mauser.
Mm-hmm.
And there was photographs of this. The police were holding this up for pictures, for press briefings. It was at the police station. They paraded this rifle around, a 7.65 German Mauser. They did this for hours. When they could not connect Oswald to that rifle disappeared, and it became a 6.75 Mannlicher Kirkano that he ordered through the mail.
Wow.
They could not match the bullets to that Mannlicher Kirkano. And the Mannlicher Kirkano was nicknamed the weapon of peace because no one had ever – it was an Italian-made rifle, and it was so poorly made that the Italian military never used it. And no one has ever been killed with an Italian Mannlicher Kirkano. And it was so poorly made that the FBI had to actually repair the scope and repair the rifle in order to even test fire to see if the bullets match ballistically.
Now, see, that should have been the story, right?
I know. There's a and all of this, and anyone who's listening, I encourage you to fact check me in real time. But there are documents, FBI internal documents, that state they did not have any fingerprints of any kind inside, internally or externally, of Oswald matching him or connecting him to this Mannlicher Kirkano rifle. They didn't have – the bullets didn't match. They had no fingerprints, no handprints, inside or out. The only time they got his fingerprints was after Oswald was dead. There was the funeral home director signed an affidavit, and I can't for the life of me remember his name right now, but the funeral director signed an affidavit that he didn't know if they were Secret Service or FBI, but there were some black suit and tie guys that came in to the funeral home with an ink pad, and they took fingerprints and palm prints off of the body of Oswald, and he testified to this because he had to clean the ink off in order to prepare the body for the viewing. And it was after Oswald was dead that they found fingerprints, after they had already had internal memos stating they could not find any fingerprints or palm prints. That's right. So, but at the time, the service elevators at the school book depository were out of service. This did not make it into the Warren report. And so what we were officially told, this is what had to have happened. Oswald had to fire 3 shots from a 6th-floor window with a tree blocking the shot. And instead of taking – because when they came down on Elm Street and turned on to Houston, the best shot that he had was coming down onto Houston towards the school book depository. That would have been the best shot. But he waited until it made a 90-degree turn, which was against Secret Service protocol, that the motorcade was to never make a 90-degree turn, ever.
Now, let me ask you a question about that motorcade. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
90 degrees, why not 90 degrees? Is that because that 90 degrees would give better angles, or would create
yes.
an angle? Yeah.
Yes, because then you create the dead-on shot, the straight-on shot, and as it turns 90 degrees, now you have a shot from the back, straight line, and then you have another head-on shot, which becomes significant, which we'll get into here in a second, but it creates too many opportunities, and in order to make a 90-degree turn, you got to slow down.
That's right.
Almost come to a stop, which is what many of the bystanders and people in the parade route all witnessed, this vehicle almost coming to a complete stop to make this turn. So there was the original, because he had a breakfast meeting early that morning with some supporters, and they were going to a it's called the trade route, and there was a building that they were going to have more guests, more supporters. There was going to be food there, but it was an area further down, which led to this motorcade route was actually designed to lead more directly to the trade mart. It was a trademark. It was a really
right.
big facility, like a warehouse, and they were going to have, you know, a big finale there at this building by going to this route. They weren't originally going to have it there, but Governor Connally threw a massive, massive fit. I mean, he threatened to cancel the entire trip if they did not have this event at the trademark. And looking back on it now, it kind of makes sense as to why he wanted this to be there. So the Secret Service initially looked at that building and they said, absolutely not. We will not have the president going to this location because it had too many entrances, too many exits, too many windows, impossible to defend. It was a nightmare for the Secret Service. They initially rejected it. They said, there's no way we're going to have the president go into this place. So they were originally going
right.
to have it somewhere else. So that's why the presidential motorcade route was leading to the original location. Well, because Governor Connally threw his weight around, the event changed to the trade route or the trademark. They had to change the motorcade, which led them directly past the school book depository,
mm-hmm.
Directly in line of that, which wouldn't have normally happened. So there were actually 8 shooters and 13 shots the day of the assassination. Now, back to my original point, with the assassination of a president, not at the time being a federal crime, if it could be determined that it was a conspiracy, then it would become the jurisdiction of the federal government to investigate that assassination. So they had to keep it a lone gunman, or the federal government would take over, which put it in the jurisdiction of the FBI and Bobby Kennedy being the Attorney General, the Department of Justice. Yeah. So there were a series of players here. So due to the – well, let me back up a little bit. So the Joseph Kennedy, the dad, The Kennedy family made their money selling alcohol, bootleg alcohol, during the Prohibition.
Right.
So Joseph Kennedy, the dad, had mafia ties, and he actually made a deal with Sam Giancana out of Chicago, Sam the man Giancana. He made a deal with him that if they would assist in getting John F. Kennedy elected president, that they would have an ally in the White House so then they could call in favors for the mafia. So Sam Giancana, with his machine, the Jim Taylor machine, if you've ever seen the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart, that's a phenomenal movie. Highly recommend that. But there's one of the protagonists in that movie, or the antagonist, sorry, is a very wealthy man that's dirty up to his eyeballs, and it's the James Taylor machine. He owns all the radio programs. He owns all the newspapers. And so he could get people elected or get them kicked out. So Sam Giancana was instrumental in getting John F. Kennedy elected. Then John F. Kennedy's father talked him into making Robert Kennedy the attorney general. So then what happened was you had mafia prosecutions go up from 16 cases a year to over 600.
Wow.
They were, the Kennedys were they were already at war with Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters. That was kind of their claim to fame. They were at war with Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters. So now all of a sudden you have a problem where you've ticked off the mafia, going from 16 prosecutions to 600. Now the Kennedy boys are at war with the mafia. Now you've upset them. Then there was an internal war going on. There was a power struggle between Bobby Kennedy, who was Attorney General at the time, at war with J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was a power struggle. So the FBI answered to Bobby Kennedy, and Hoover resented that. And Bobby had a call button installed in his office where he would buzz Hoover, and Hoover would have to come over and answer to him, his whim. So there was a bitter power struggle between those two. So now you have the mafia upset. Now you've got the FBI upset. And then over the Bay of Pigs invasion, where the CIA was secretly trying to assassinate Fidel Castro.
Yep.
Through Operation Mongoose. And Bobby Kennedy was involved in that against the wishes of John F. Kennedy. So he had to keep that. It was the Gang of 40 and Operation Gladio. They were trying to assassinate Fidel Castro. So then the CIA went to invade Cuba in the Bay of Pigs, and John F. Kennedy called off the air support that was supposed to go in and precede the attack to soften up the Cuban military to give the 1,500, 1,600 strong Cuban military, those who had come from the United States back over to Cuba, to give them a chance to invade. And because he called off the air support, the invasion collapsed quickly and everybody was either killed or captured. So
amazing.
Now because the CIA were in bed with the mafia, and it was to a point they begin to blur the lines between what is CIA and what's mafia, because the mafia was making, and actually the CIA, I'll back up a little bit, the CIA was actually giving guns and military support to Fidel Castro to overthrow Batista. And Fidel Castro took that support, and it was only after he got into power that he switched and announced that he was communist, and he took over all the casinos, and he took over all the drug routes and all the drug trades, and shut down the mafia operations, because Cuba was their Las Vegas at the time, and the CIA was gun running and running alcohol and drugs and all those through Cuba, because that supplied their black budget. So now Fidel Castro takes over Cuba, essentially shutting down the mafia and the CIA operations in that country. So now the mafia has lost millions, billions of dollars in today's money, 16 to 1, I think it is. So they lost billions of dollars, and they really wanted Cuba back. So then they started working with the mafia hitman were way more efficient than CIA. So the Central Intelligence Agency being wanting to keep their hands clean, they would use mafia men because they were easier to burn and they were arm's length transactions. So they couldn't say, we didn't kill him. You know, we paid this guy over here to do it. So now the mafia is upset with the Kennedys, the FBI is upset with the Kennedys, the CIA is upset with the Kennedys, and John F. Kennedy had at least one affair with the head of the Secret Service's wife, and so that came out. They kept it hush hush, but there was enough people to know about it that the right people were upset. So now you've got the Secret Service, FBI, Mafia, and CIA all turning against the Kennedy boys. So that's not a winning formula for anybody to be on the opposite side of that. Oh my gosh! So it's interesting. And I was trying to do some real quick research before I got on here. I can't remember the guy's name, but so at the time when Kennedy found out about this, he actually fired the head of the Secret Service, which is Alan Dulles. And Alan Dulles, his brother, was John Foster, which is where Dulles Airport was named after, Dulles Airport.
Right.
So, and then on the Warren Commission, the one guy of all the people they could have picked, they put on the Warren Commission Alan Dulles to sit on the Warren Commission to investigate the Kennedy assassination, the guy that got fired for the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Wow.
And there was another guy.
How convenient opportunities right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, how convenient. How convenient. That's right. And the other guy, his name was Cabal. He was fired. I think he was the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Cabal. He was fired along with Alan Dulles. And Cabal's brother was the mayor of Dallas. And so there's some very interesting conveniences that, like you're saying. So there is a work of evidence going back to Oswald. And Oswald is the key to this whole thing, because if you can show that there's a conspiracy of two or more, it becomes a federal crime. The reason why they needed this to happen in Dallas is because if you know anything about LBJ, his nickname was Lying Lyndon. There was actually a book about Lying Lyndon and Ballot Box 13. So Ballot Box 13 was a ballot box when Lyndon was trying to run for Senate, that he all the votes were counted, and then at the midnight hour, this Ballot Box 13 showed up with just enough votes to get him the election, and he became a senator. Well, then he became one of the most – he became the most powerful senator in the Senate because he ran Texas. He had judges and lawyers and coroners and you name it. He had Texas tied up with all his oil
right.
men buddies. And so the best way to control the – because the cover-up is usually bigger than the crime, which is why they needed the assassination to happen in Texas. Now, there's a little rabbit trail with Jason off here, but the first black Secret Service agent, his name was I can't think of his name. Oh, man. I'll think of it here in a second. I'm going to look him up. But there was – he was a his name was Abraham Bolden. Sorry, Abraham Bolden. He was the first black Secret Service agent. And, of course, at that time, it's the early 60s, there was still considerable racial tension because the Civil Rights Act and Martin Luther King had not come into full swing yet. So the President Kennedy met they had this the Secret Service agent guarding the men's restroom in the basement at this one of these stops. And President Kennedy ran into him, and they got to talking. And Kennedy put in an order and ordered him to be on his presidential detail. Against everybody saying no, he said, I want him on my presidential detail. LBJ was not happy about it because he was probably one of the most racist presidents we've ever had. And there are YouTube recordings of his conversations, and he's not friendly. So that was against his wishes. So they put him on the presidential detail. And
this was 1961?
Yes, 60-61, yep. And it was because of Abraham Bolden. He was instrumental in stopping three previous assassination attempts. One was in Tampa, one was in Chicago, and I think one was in Miami. So he was instrumental, and he somehow found out that there was going to be an assassination attempt, and he exposed it, and they immediately shut down the parade route and flew the president out. And this happened three separate times, and he paid dearly for it, and he got ran through the ringer for money laundering and taking bribes, and he was in charge of finding counterfeit money and stopping those types of operations. And the powers that be, the deep state, they went after him and took him down. And it took years for him to get his name back, and he never really did. But I think he just recently died.
What, 2022, right?
Yeah, it was.
Pardoned by Joe Biden.
Yep. Abraham Bolden. So he was very instrumental.
I had never heard that before. I had not heard anything about Joe Biden giving anybody a presidential pardon.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one. Abraham Bolden.
He was one of them. That's right.
Wow.
Yep, pardoned by Biden. Yep. So that's a very interesting story. He wrote a book on it about his life, and it's a very interesting angle. He was able to kind of shed some light on some of the inside baseball and the Secret Service and about the Kennedys. And he wasn't the most well liked president, but Abraham Bolden was able to have a kind of inside seat to the workings and the goings on of the White House. But yeah, it's a very interesting angle. So we know that there were previous attempts. So, and it's interesting. There was a President Carter was almost assassinated. And the reason I bring that up, President Carter's assassination attempt, the names of the guys that were going to, that got arrested for potentially assassinating Jimmy Carter, at the time he was planning on shutting down the CIA because of their involvement with the Iranian hostage situation.
Yeah.
And the, trying to look up their names now.
I think the,
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Yeah, what year was that? Is that 78?
That was, yeah, I think it was
like,
70.
Okay.
It's, yeah, it's either 78 or 79.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. One of the assassins was named, so this was, this is a little bit of conspiratorial, but I think this was the CIA sending a subtle message to Carter. One of the men that was going to kill Carter, his name was Raymond Lee Harvey.
Really?
Yeah. And the other guy, his name was, yeah, where's it at? I'm trying to think of his. Yeah, Raymond Lee Harvey, and the other guy was like Oswald or something Oswald.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I'm serious. Oh, there it is. Here it is. Oswaldo Espinoza Ortiz. But you got Oswald and Raymond Lee Harvey as the two guys that are gonna, that got caught for attempting to assassinate Carter. Now that could just be super conspiracy theory, but I think it might be a little subtle warning to, hey, you need to cool your jets and leave the CIA alone. But that was just a kind of a so just a little side note, just an interesting factoid, I guess. So there's a really, really, really good YouTube video called The Innocence of Oswald, and that guy did a 20-year dive into The Innocence of Oswald. But the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 79, I think it was 79, might have been 7, yeah, I think it was 79, they actually did they did research on John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
And it was their findings that, due to their research, that they believe that Oswald, that Kennedy actually did die, likely was assassinated as a result of a conspiracy theory. So which is counter to the Warren Commission report that they swear up and down that everything points to a lone gunman.
Okay.
Now the interesting thing is that Oswald was not arrested for the killing of Kennedy. Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested for the killing of Tippit, Officer J.D. Tippit.
Right, right.
So there's a very interesting point about that. Eyewitnesses were willing to come forward and testify that they witnessed two men shooting Officer Tippit, not one. But that never made it into the Warren report. They didn't really want to talk about the assassination of J.D. Tippit. Now, if you look at a picture of J.D. Tippit, he looks extremely similar to JFK, so much so that his nickname in the Dallas Police Department was Jack. He looked, there's a picture it pulls up on YouTube. It shows like the right-hand side, right side of the face of J.D. Tippit and the left side of John F. Kennedy, and it's eerily similar how close that they look like each other. But I'll tie into that later. So one of the interesting points was that back then, in 63, for 38 revolvers and 38 automatics, semi-automatics. The ammunition was not interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
You could not shoot a 38 revolver in a 38 automatic or semi-automatic.
Right.
So when they went to the body, went to the crime scene, they found four shell casings on the ground. Lee Harvey Oswald owned a 38 revolver. Those do not eject shells unless you do it intentionally. So why would Oswald shoot a cop and then stand around long enough to drop four shell casings on the ground? His wallet was also found at the scene. Now, that will become significant.
So this is like finding a perfect driver's license or a wallet unscathed after an airplane crashes into the building, and it just so happens that that's one of the hijackers on an airplane just crashed in the building, you know, a couple of 100 stories up. No burn marks with
them. That's right.
So that's like
you got it. Mm. You got it. That's right. So they find his wallet. It's photographed. Photographers took pictures of police officers standing around talking about this wallet, Lee Harvey Oswald's wallet. So the shell casings were two Remington and two Winchester automatic shell casings. Problem is, he didn't own an automatic. He owned a revolver.
Right.
In the body, after the autopsy of J.D. Tippit, they found three Remington and one Winchester.
Oh.
So now we have a problem. So the shell casings went from being automatics to being revolvers, but then they messed up, whoever messed up, by having two Remingtons, two Winchesters on the ground, but three Remingtons and one Winchester in the body.
Mm.
That's a very significant point of inquiry right there. Kind of hard to shoot that one down. So they originally went after Oswald for shooting Tippit. There was so he ran into the movie theater. There were phone calls coming in that somebody had entered, numerous phone calls, by the way, that someone had entered a movie theater without paying for a ticket. Now, that's important because who would constantly call the police department to say, hey, this guy didn't pay for a ticket?
Yeah,
and
right.
15 minutes after the assassination of Kennedy, The J. Edgar Hoover, actually less than 15 minutes, had already broadcast out the description and the identity of Oswald. Now, how do they know that, you know, within 15 minutes? But Oswald ran to this. He didn't run. He went home. He actually got on a bus. It was taking too long to get through the traffic, so he got a transfer ticket. Took a cab, went to his house, changed clothes, grabbed his pistol, and walked to this movie theater where he was subsequently arrested. But when he got there, there were already police officers waiting for him in the alley because other police officers arrived there when they received tips that he was at this movie theater. And when they arrested him, they went to take him out the back door, and there were police officers waiting. And they didn't know each other were going to be there. So the detectives that originally arrested Oswald did not know that the other police officers were in the back alley waiting. So, and this is significant because when they arrested him and booked Oswald, one of the items turned in, the evidence was his wallet. So how can he have his wallet in the movie theater and have dropped it at the scene of J.D. Tippit's execution?
Mm.
that first wallet disappeared. We do not know to this day where that wallet went. It was never turned into evidence. And there's no chain of custody. No one knows where that wallet is. It's just very interesting that it was in one place and then disappears and shows up in another. So he was arrested for the shooting of J.D. Tippit. And it was much later on that he was informed that he was under arrest for the assassination of the presidents. But back to the so that gets into the jail. So back to the school book depository. So at the day of the assassination, the service elevators were out of order. So
right.
we are expected to believe that Oswald, who, according to his Marine Corps record, was a horrible shot, barely qualified in the Marine Corps to be a marksman. I think marksman is the either expert or marksman. It was barely qualified to be in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
So
marksman is, I think you have to hit at least, 30 out of 50 shots to be a marksman?
Yeah, he was had a horrible shooting record.
Yeah, that's barely making the cut.
And then on top of that, you're shooting from a six-floor window with a tree blocking the shot. As the target's moving away with a rifle that's subpar at best, that has a non-working sight, and the bolt action had to be corrected in order to test fire the rifle. So there's a lot of things that had to go right.
It was not an automatic rifle. It was a bolt action rifle, which means that you had to physically move the bolt back in order to rechamber the next round.
That's right.
And that's something for people who don't know what these weapons are doing, because, I mean, nowadays you don't see a bolt action unless you got one of these old rifles. Everything else is
pretty much
done for you, you know?
Yeah, you had to fire it and then recite.
Yeah, that's a hard thing. Yeah. I mean, I had the chance to shoot one of those bolt action rifles, and it's next to impossible to get three shots off in 5 seconds or however. You know, you have to really kind of, I mean, you if you're shooting deer, okay, fine. You get one good shot in there, you might land, but you're talking, like you said, a moving car, small silhouette from distance and height in front of it, you know, with a tree in front of you, it's next to impossible.
Yep. So we're told that he, what really happened was he had to fire three shots, hide this rifle, and then make it down to the first floor and sneak out of the building. Well, the service elevators were in the back right-hand corner of his firing position. So he had to hide the rifle, fire three shots, hide the rifle, go diagonally across this warehouse floor on the sixth floor, and go down from the sixth floor to the second floor, which is where the break room was. Now, there were two employees, two ladies that were coming up the stairs from the third that he would have had to have passed coming down. They testified and signed an affidavit that they passed no one coming down as they were going up. And so there was no one coming down. He had to go down four flights of stairs to get from the sixth to the second, past two employees without being seen. Then he ordered a Coke from the Coke machine and was standing in the second floor break room having a Coke, not tired, not sweating, not breathing heavy, completely relaxed, in time for Marion Baker, the Dallas motorcycle officer, to come running up from the first floor to the second to draw a gun on him when the building manager came with him and said, no, he's one of our employees. And then they went to search the building for whoever the shooter was. So that's hard to explain. That information was not in the Warren report, that the elevators were out. Two employees were coming up, never saw Oswald come down. and that Marion Baker, a police officer, encountered him on the second floor. So that's a problem, which has never been addressed. And how can that be if the elevator was out? And then you still have to explain the first rifle. What was the first rifle doing there? The German Mauser, 7.65 Mauser, and how it where is that rifle now? Because it disappeared and then became a 6.75 Mannlicher Kirkano. So then there's actually a photograph, a very famous photograph, of Oswald standing in the doorway of the school book depository just before Kennedy's assassinated. And it actually shows, it might have been right after the shot, actually, but it shows Oswald standing in the doorway with Secret Service men looking back over their right shoulders in the direction of the school book depository with him standing in the doorway. Now, there's some speculation initially that that was actually a fellow coworker of his called Lovejoy, last name Lovejoy, who looked similar. But if you look at the shirts they were wearing were two different types of shirts. One was a striped shirt, and one was a solid brown color. But the shirt Oswald was wearing was actually the one that matches the shirt in the photo of him standing in the doorway. So there's some speculation on that because they do look similar to each other because their hairlines were similar, but there was some speculation. But then Lovejoy come down and actually testified or gave a statement that he was not in the in the doorway. It was not him, but they didn't want to hear that.
Right.
So at the time they did a paraffin test on the hands and face of Oswald at the Dallas Police Department. And that was a test to determine if there was any residue of gunpowder or having recently fired a gun. And they said in a press conference, the Dallas Police Department chief, he said that the paraffin test came back positive. That was not, in fact, true. That was a lie.
Wow.
Because we actually have the test, and Oswald tested negative for any kind of gunpowder residue on his hands or his face. So he did not fire a shot. Well, it gives credibility to the fact that he did not. It's still circumstantial because he could have wore gloves or a mask.
Also, when he was yelling at people saying that I'm a patsy. Yeah, I would say so.
Yep. That's right. So Oswald, so they did find they found nitrates on his hands. But nitrates are different than gunpowder residue because the nitrates they found on his hands were the kind used in ink for printing. He worked in a school book depository handling books. So he would have nitrates working with books, but the traces that they found of nitrates were not gunpowder related from having fired a weapon recently. So that's very interesting. So Oswald was actually he actually worked for Navy intelligence, being a Marine. Is the Marine Corps being a branch of the Navy. He was stationed in Japan at a Navy base, a highly secret Navy Air Force base, where the U-2 spy plane was based. Lee Harvey Oswald worked there and had a top-tier security clearance related to the U-2 spy plane.
Right.
And this was significant because he was involved in Operation Redskin. And Operation Redskin was a military operation. It was a joint operation between the United States and Canada where military personnel would go and defect to Russia. And he was one of those one of those men. So Oswald defects to Russia, and but prior to that, he was seen and actually recorded. There are video recordings of him handing out leaflets from a Fair Trade for Cuba organization that was supposed to be a nonprofit organization that was trying to get support for Fidel Castro in Cuba. And he was very vocal and very visible passing out these leaflets. Now, the important thing to note about these leaflets that Oswald handed out was there was an address where he had an office, and the address on these leaflets was actually in New Orleans. This was out of New Orleans, by the way. There was the office that he had listed on these pamphlets was also the office of a former FBI case manager, and he was the handler for Oswald, and his name was Guy Bannister. And Guy Bannister is a very significant figure in the Kennedy assassination because he also had ties to the mafia and the FBI and was also connected to Lee Harvey Oswald. There were witnesses who came forward and testified that Lee Harvey Oswald knew Jack Ruby because
right.
Ruby was running guns and ammunition and supplies, drugs and other things to Cuba and worked for the mafia. Now, the Warren Report and the Warren Commission discounted his connections to the mafia and actually stated there is no evidence connecting Jack Ruby to the mafia. Jack Ruby's real name is, his name was Jack Rubenstein.
Right. Yep.
And Jack Rubenstein owned several Dallas nightclubs. And at the time of the assassination, there were people that worked at the nightclubs with Jack Ruby that testified, or at least presented statements that said we were introduced to Oswald by Jack Ruby. We saw them eating together, and some even put Oswald, Ruby, and Tippett at the same table. There's a document. There's a document that you can look up. It's on one of those documents that were released, declassified, where there was an investigation into Jack Ruby, and there was this memo that went out that said, do not investigate Jack Ruby because he is an employee of Richard Nixon.
Wow.
And so they did not investigate Ruby early on for his criminal activity because he worked for Richard Nixon. Just very,
wow.
Just a very interesting little tidbit there. So,
oh my gosh.
yeah. So Oswald was actually a member of the Navy intelligence. So there's a very interesting, another interesting piece about this was that when Oswald defected to Russia, he couldn't speak Russian. Oswald could not speak Russian. He had a horrible military record, barely qualified, and so there was this plan to build up a backstory for Oswald to go and defect to Russia to become a double agent. Well, the Russians were all over that like stink on a dog. They knew immediately what was going on because he didn't. He stayed for a little while, married a Russian woman whose father was one of the higher ups in the KGB. So they were all over him. They knew immediately what he was doing. But the interesting thing is, at the time in 60, I think he came back in 61, came back in 61. So at the time when you defected to another country, the only way that you could get back your citizenship and your citizen status, you could only get that back with the written permission of one person, the United States Attorney General.
Right.
Oswald come back and began to work for Bobby Kennedy, because Bobby knew that the mafia was breathing down their necks, the CIA was breathing down their necks. There was all this activity going on, so Oswald, the only way he could come back and get his, because he walked right back into the country. He got his citizenship back by getting permission to work for Bobby Kennedy. And there was a, there's what's called a 203 file, and if someone has a 203 file, that means they are an employee of or an asset of the FBI. So there is evidence, and these are W-2 employees. Lee Harvey Oswald received income from the FBI as a either an employee or a paid informant and received W-2 pay. That did not make it into the Warren Report, because then you have to explain how the FBI, one of their own, went and assassinated the president. So that did not, that was not information they wanted to get out. So the so there was a group of 40. They called it the Group of 40. There was 40 men. They were assassins that operated a clandestine operation, that they would go and assassinate whoever stood against the interest of the United States. Bobby Kennedy knew about this because they were training in Europe and South America for the assassination of Fidel Castro.
Well, hang on one second.
Yeah.
When you said the interest of the United States, I then have to ask, who or what is the United States?
Well, what we think of the United States isn't what we really are. We're a corporation, and that changed the game. And that actually, this was when, and I think that actually happened. The corporation of the United States, I think that actually happened during the Lincoln presidency, and the 14th Amendment. It changed the game and made us a corporation.
That's very curious. Yeah, that's very curious, because when you talk about the best interest of the United States, that means that there's somebody above the office of the president who can, you know, obviously assassinate the leadership or the supposed leadership. So that in turn would be a shadow government, would it not?
That's right. And I think that's where the coup d'etat began, with the assassination of the president. That's what changed us from that's what made us a banana republic at that point. And it's never, we became an official police state after the assassination of the president, because then LBJ took over, and we got embroiled in the Vietnam. So then that, you know, that kind of leads on to the an event that got us into the into Vietnam. There was an attack, which turned out to not be an attack at all. There was a Vietnamese Navy ship that attacked United States Navy. A bunch of people died, and turned out that was an event that never happened. and that was a precursor that led us into the Vietnam War. I'll think of it in a second.
More times than not, does it not? That was like a spoof, and they made it out to be something that it wasn't. And by the time it is properly vetted out to the public, we're already busting caps and dropping bombs on people's heads.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was called the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Gulf of Tonkin, yes, sir.
Gulf of Tonkin. So there was a PBS documentary in the late '90s called The Fog of War.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed Robert McNamara, who at the time was the Secretary of State. And they asked him about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and he admits on that documentary that it never happened.
Right.
Well, that was the event that got us officially at war with Vietnam, and 58,000 men died.
Let me throw something else to you. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we had a similar, something on the same lines that got us into a war with Iraq, if I'm not mistaken, because I believe they had a young lady who came into the Senate and said that Saddam was doing all of these things to the people of Iraq, and it turns out that she was a mouthpiece to get us emotionally attached to the idea of going into war. So,
with the incubator babies?
I believe so. I believe so. This is, a long time ago. I'm going off the top of my dome here. But this is not the first time that this stuff happened. So as somebody who tries to pay attention, we really have to be strong when we hear of war and rumors of war. And the same thing is happening right now with Ukraine. I mean, can you imagine, 10 or 15 years after the conflict is over, we start hearing the truth. We're kind of getting leaks now that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and continue. We have approximately 15 minutes. Go ahead.
Sure. I heard it said the other day that the difference between a conspiracy theory and the truth is 6 months.
That's true.
So a lot of stuff's coming out, but I think the Kennedy assassination as the big event, just like the big event of the AD and BC on our calendar. I think because everything hinges on that. It was after that that we really started ramping up involvement in other countries. That's when you got the Iran-Contra, you got the all these other wars. We've been at war since day one. After the Civil War, we never really stopped. Or after the Revolutionary War, we never really stopped. We've been at war forever. Because war is big money. And,
of course. The military-industrial complex.
Oh, yeah. Eisenhower warned against the industrial complex. And he sat down with Kennedy and kind of told him about the industrial complex and how deep it ran in the deep state. And there was actually a speech given by Kennedy at the press conference, there's a Washington Press Corps dinner. It's a very famous speech about conspiracies and secret society in America.
Yes, sir.
And that was one of the probably the speech that kind of set the direction of his presidency. And he was going to take down the Federal Reserve. He was going to disband the Secret Service. He was cleaning out the swamp. And he was not without his faults. He had his affairs. But I think he was probably one of the last great presidents this country's had, because he truly cared about the country. He was a former military in the Navy with PT-109. And a very famous war story there. saved his crew and on the boat PT-109, had a movie made out of it. And
PT-1, so, that's a river boat, right?
Yeah, it's like a fast attack.
Like a fast attack, shallow bottom. Yeah.
Speedboat.
Yep.
You know, I think it had a crew of 11, 7 or 11, I can't remember which one. But it was a very small crew on it, so they could get in and get out quickly and run defense for a bigger boat. And he had some military background, so he was a patriot in spite of his family's connections to now the dad, oddly enough, the dad, Joseph Kennedy, actually wanted to run for president. He was an ambassador. They made him an ambassador to England. But he could not run for president because too many Nazi connections.
Mm. Wow.
And the Kennedys were actually very, I would say, friendly to many of their – they had a lot of Nazi connections. They were sympathetic to the cause in some instances, just like who was the guy Spirit of St. Louis, guy that flew across the English Channel.
Yeah, don't give me the last name.
Yeah, he was a very famous pilot, and he Charles Lindbergh. Yeah, Charles Lindbergh, and he went over in the early 30s and actually toured Nazi Germany and looked at their air force, the Luftwaffe, and come back to the United States and told them it was the most advanced Air Force he'd ever seen, and that the United States Air Force didn't stand a chance. And he had many Nazi ties as well. But so Joseph Kennedy could not run for president because of his Nazi ties. And that's one of the chapters in my book that I'm writing, How the Nazis Won World War II, JFK and the Trump Conspiracy.
Mm.
And it ties in the Unholy Alliance, Nazi Germany and the Vatican, and the Unholy Alliance, and Hitler's priest. And that ties into, which is a conversation for another day, but ties into Operation Paperclip and how the 40,000 Nazis made it out of the United States, or made it out of Europe and into the United States. One of which became the head of research and development for the Nazi war machine, actually made it out of Europe and into the United States, was sent directly to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and then eventually became the head of NASA, being Wernher von Braun, the creator of the V-1 and V-2 rockets, which they used to...
We have a lot of things for the Nazis for cruise missiles and, Atlas rockets and space shuttles, rocketry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there was a lot of Nazi connections we have. I think it was three popes ago. There was forget what that pope's name was, but he was a member of the Hitler Youth Movement, and he was the pope. I think two, not this one, but the two, the second two ago, three priests. Three popes ago was a member of the Hitler Youth. Arnold Schwarzenegger's dad was a member of a Nazi. George Soros,
of course,
on 60 Minutes was admitted to being a Nazi sympathizer when he was 14, 15 years old. They used him to go ferret out Jews that were in hiding, and George Soros was instrumental in thousands of Jews being taken to their deaths. And he admitted on 60 Minutes that he was a Nazi sympathizer. And one of his admirers several admirers of him was Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, all your typicals that you would
all
think would be sympathizers of Nazis.
Yeah.
So
fantastic quotables.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So that's just a little on the Kennedy assassination and the innocence of Oswald, and we could go a lot longer, but that's just a toe in the water.
Holy smokes.
That's a mystery that'll probably never be solved. But there's I think it's already been solved. It's just the information is so scattered. Getting it all together in one sequence to make it all make sense is going to be near impossible. But I think a lot of the pieces are already still more to come on that.
So to sum it up, there are a lot of corrupt moving parts, and it just seems like I mentioned earlier, it just seems like that there is another government that's, I guess, over top of the public government that we see anytime a president can get knocked off by its own. I mean, and now it is 2023, and we're hearing about the FBI and the CIA running roughshod over the people by using social media or to control social media to get a desired response out of presidential vote.
So I'm trying to figure out,
so we have one government and we have another government. So how is it that you can get, and this is a dumb question, how is it that you can corrupt people to do literally damnable things to its own people? I mean, how much freaking money does it take for you to sell out?
Yeah, well, they're very good at what they do, and they seek out the vulnerable who have little to no moral backbone, and like the Hunter Bidens of the world, and
no doubt
they exploit them, and the big guy being Joe Biden, you know, they'll use them, and until they're no longer of use, and then they'll bump them off in some convenient way, and it'll look like an accident or natural causes, and they'll conveniently get Epstein'd, and they'll just keep right on doing what they do because they're the deep state, and no matter who's in office, the deep state guys are the ones that never get elected, and they stay in their jobs for 40 years. And regardless of who's in office, they get to keep their office and stay in positions of power and control. And the dark offices in the Pentagon, you know, they've lost. It was interesting. You may have seen this this report where Donald Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, admitted that the Pentagon did not account for $2 trillion in undocumented transactions. Then the next day, the plane hits the accounting office of the Pentagon. Of all the places to hit, you hit the accounting office, which they apparently don't care about. Mighty convenient.
Awfully convenient.
Yes, it is. Convenient inconveniences.
Well, sir, listen, I appreciate you coming on. Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. And next time we come on, we cover Martin Luther King Jr. Right now, we're talking with David Tony. He is a wonderful researcher as he dives deep into the assassination of JFK. And when we come back, we're going to dig deep into the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. When we come right back on Fireback Radio, you can find us online at firebackradio.com. We'll be back. That's all we got for today. I guess we can come back tomorrow and cover MLK.
Yeah, that was good. I love that kind of stuff. Got me going.
Yeah, man. I heard the juices in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I'm doing this Blog Talk Radio, and I only had like 90 minutes of airtime. I didn't stop you because with commercial interruption, it would have just run over. But if you want to come back like tomorrow, we can really pick up where we left off. And what I'm hoping that this episode was clean, And also tomorrow, I guess I'm going to try to, I have to go to my truck and get my actual speaker, because I would have had it done over the over my Bluetooth speaker. That way the sound is much better.
Sure.
But yeah, man, if you got time to pick up on the tail end of JFK and start with the MLK, we can do that tomorrow. Let's do
mm-hmm.
it.
You got it.
All right, cool, man. My wife started cooking, man, so I'm going to go in there and see what she's burning up.
Okay.
I can tell you what it's not. You know what I'm saying?
What was this before you cooked it?
Right. Yeah, I can't say that too loud. I don't want to get hit with a spatula.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we'll touch base tomorrow and do this again.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you, bro.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right, have a good one.